Not that cricket.
Clubhouse In podcast, and this particular episode is brought to you in partnership with Sky Nash. Thank you very much for partnering with us. Who says that? Anyway, this particular episode, we're going to be looking at the men's performance. In the previous episode, we talked about the Zimbabwe women's performance at the African Games, where they won the gold. The men also then won the gold a week later. So we're going to go through, the good things that happened and some of the things that can be improved. Remember, this podcast brings you as close as possible to the game in Zimbabwe, making sure that you are as updated and understand what's going on with the game. And pretty much excited. Eli Tamirepi joins me again for this particular episode. Master Eli, as we call him. And as we go through what happened in Accra. It is the Cloud Bus and podcast. The name is Larry Kurarai, the podcast that gets you as close to the Zimbabwean game as possible. And we just talked about the women's game. The Golden Girls, is it proper to call them the Golden Girls? Because I think there's only one Golden Girls, really.
There's only one. You have to find some.
Yeah, the Golden Crickets, Golden Chevrons. Because both teams got in. Sorry, by the way, I'm with Eli.
I don't know. We need to find something befitting, but with a bit of gold in it.
Goride. Angoda is diamond. What is gold in Shoshana?
Goride. Yeah, goride.
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 Yes. This is where our people don't even. Korokoza, so you can. Korokoza girls. And boys. So now let's talk about the men's. Clive Madande, the captain, and it was just a ruthless performance. There's no point at any point that I think Zimbabwe, the young chevrons, the young starlets, whatever you want to call them, minor chevrons, I don't know. There was no point really that they looked like they were in trouble.
No, not at all. I can't actually remember being in trouble. That's what you would say, trouble. The only time that I would say there was something was amiss was in the final, actually, against Namibia. If you do remember, Clive Madande got injured in that game when Zimbabwe was batting. And when the game started, he was not the wicketkeeper. He was not even on the field of play. Marumani was the one keeping wicket. And then after like three overs in the power play, Clive Madande was like, things are not going to plan. Let me get onto the field of play. And he took the gloves back. And the captain was like, I'm back on the field. 12th man, Rabas, I'm back in this. Let me steer this ship home. That's the only time where things were a mess. And the essence of Clive Madande as a captain to see it from being on the side of play and say, yes, I have got, you know, my. I think he hurt his finger while he was batting. He was hit by the ball, but still he's like, you know what? Let me just soldier on and finish this job that I've started. And look where it ended up. He's got gold around his neck.
I'm very curious. I mean, I obviously when you're watching it on the limited cameras, and shout out to ICC. And Sports Eye and the African Games for giving us those pictures. I mean, they even ended up on SuperSport. So, it's easy to say that it's good captaincy because I can see the bowling changes. It looks like there's a bit of thinking in there. There's a bit of intentionality. The fielding, you can see that they're strangling the opposition. I'm not going to talk about the bowlers individually for now, but from you seeing, what sort of captaincy do you think he has?
I think he thinks about the game on a larger scale. Like, what are we looking to do? What are our strengths? And if you look at it from game one, he had the belief that our strength is our batting. Let's put runs on the board, as many as possible, and then we defend that. because he always believed that we can score more than the opposition. So why be in a place where we are chasing when we can set the target? And also his ability to assess the pitch. He came in there. I did the first game, the toss, and like, Clive, what are you looking to do? He's like, we haven't played on this surface before, but I've watched the women's tournament. It looks like a good batting surface. So for me, we're going to bat first. And from what we saw, it's a good spin option as the day goes. So that's what we're going to do. Bat first, put runs on the board, and look to defend. And he went with it. And it worked well for him.
I mean, I'm like, look at that match. In the last five overs, scored something like 60 runs. I was like, before, these guys are really going to make 120, 130, really, guys? This is going to be, next thing, it's 190 odd. Yeah. It was 183 the first match, I think.
197. It was 197. Yeah. 197 was the target. So, how Clive broke it down to me was saying that the pass score from the curator, Fungai, and everybody saying 160, get 160 on the board, you should be able to defend that. But they got 160 with five overs to go. And Clive was like, what's holding us back? We have seven wickets in hand. Let's put the foot to the pedal, you know, throw the kitchen sink to it. Let's get as many as we can. That's how you see they got those 60 runs. They were now going at 15 and over, 12 and over, and they got a 200, became a reachable target. So that essence of mind saying, we have reached the pass goal. From here on, let me get as much as I can. Even if I lose my wicket, it's not about me, but it's about the team, what the team needs to get. And look who got them.
I see that against Kenya. I think that's when the next time they bat first, because every other game afterwards, they lose the toss and they bat in second. Against Kenya, it comes in. And I think at that point, Jonathan Campbell and must have been Brian Bennett had set a platform. And it looked like, you know what, we're probably going to get 140 here. And he comes in. First ball he faces, hits it for a six. And then next over, there's a single and hits that for a four. I'm like, what are we saying?
No, for me, that's the thing. So I asked Clive, like, what has been the key to your, this batting performance that you guys are presenting us, or this showcase of batting masterpieces whereby people just come in? It's like, what we aim to do as the side in this tournament is that there should be no difference when we lose a wicket. It should not affect our scoring rate. It should not affect the target that we have. The target is not for the top order or for the middle order. It's for the whole team. Guys, we need to put 160 plus on the board. So if I get in there, it's in the zone, within my arc, I'm going to send it. So even if it's the first ball, you put it in the arc. Oh my guy, I am just, don't falter me, I am going to go for it. There's no looking at the ball, there's no, let me get my eye in. Because this is within my zone. I don't need to have a look at something that is already within my arc. Yes, I can have a look if it's a good ball. It's no back of a length. Oh, okay, you got a bit of pace, but this is spin. I'm going to take you on. And he took them on. And that charge of somebody coming in hits you back as a bowler. I'm like, this guy.
First ball.
And it's not a fluke shot. You can clearly see that I have been smashed, not by just a meter of the ball. He has hit me out of the park. Guys are searching for the ball in the forest. That means this guy is going to, he's going to take me on. And second ball, he does that. Also, another good shot to show you, like, my guy, I'm here to play cricket, not to play a name. Of which that was the message actually for the boys. You're here to play cricket, not names. You're not here to play Namibia. We're not here to play Uganda. We're here to play the game of cricket. So let's play cricket. And they did that.
And looking at that, as you say it, there's also excitement in your face, by the way. Because you're like, oh, this is how Zimbabwe should play. But from what I saw, just to finish off on Clive Madade, if you look at the acceleration in the innings, he comes in and becomes the one who lights up the torch paper. I mean, it's different from the first innings. I think I mean, from the final, we're going to talk about Marumanu in a bit. But that point, when he comes in, not just, well, in the first match, and then also when Zimbabwe looked, they lost like 4 or 5 wickets, and I think with the second match,
yeah.
And he decides, look, I'm just going to win this match now.
Yeah.
Enough of messing around.
So that kind of person who takes on that responsibility to say, okay, I'm not going to look at somebody else to take us over the line. I believe in the second game they were chasing just about 70-something runs on the board. Like, what are we waiting for? Let's get this thing over with. We're already past the 30-yard mark. Let's get it on. You know, the more we try just to knock the ball around, yes, the required run, it is 3 runs and over. But why are we doing it 3 runs and over? We've been going at 12. Let me just look at it as if we need to set 160, 170. Let me smash this thing. Let's not play to according how they played. Let's play our game. In our game, see ball, hit ball if it is there to be hit. And that's what they did. So that was the uniqueness of Clive Madande and the ability to trust people. Like how he assigned roles to his bowlers as a captain. For me, that was remarkable. He knew who to turn to if things were off the rails, if the opposition was scoring at a higher run rate than what they anticipated. He always knew who to turn to. He's like, okay, maybe Trevor Gwando has gone for plenty. Macheka has gone for plenty. Let me slow things down. Owen, do your thing. Let's slow them down. On the opposite side, Msekiwa, let's slow them down. And the ability of those bowlers to understand their role that, okay, I am that guy with the golden arm. I have been brought in to make something happen out of nothing. And they did that. Every time Owen Mzundu had the ball in his hand, a wicket was going to fall in that over. He would pick up 3. Every time Msekiwa had the ball, the run rate would drop from 10 and over to 6 and over. He has done his job. So that ability to trust people as a captain to say, do this. This is your job. And then the players living up to the captain's expectations. Absolutely amazing.
And I guess having said that, looking at Owen Zondo, and I think Tashingam Sekewa, we'll talk about Tashingam Sekewa's batting in a bit, because there was that match when he had 39 off 10.
Yeah.
I remember I was like watching that, and I was like, well, okay. Probably going to make a 160 here. He comes on, is like, nope, Larry, we're not going to make 160 here. We're going.
It's like a 200-plus, man.
But, I mean, it's sort of thing that you see other teams do, and sometimes even do it to Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Seeing that coming out of a Zimbabwean team, especially playing against teams, albeit, lower-level teams, but in the case of Namibia, they're quite a few first teamers in their team. That gives you, as the chairman of Zimbabwe Cricket said, not just a glimmer of hope. The future is bright.
Very bright. One thing that I'll make mention, Namibia didn't send an A side. When they started the tournament, we played a full-strength Namibian side. Probably just their captain and one other guy were missing from it. Yeah, David Visser. But that was a full-strength side. It's only in the latter stages of the game where they lost 3 or 4 players, for certain reasons. But
that sounds loaded, but we won't ask.
But then the essence of the Zimbabwean under 25s to say, we're not playing names. We're not going to play history that you guys beat us in the qualifiers earlier on in the year. This is a whole new playing field. We're all here for one reason. We're chasing gold. That's brilliant. And then the ability of Msekiwa, if you go back to and watch that game, in my commentary when that happened, when Msekiwa came on, I was of the notion, and I did say that Msekiwa is going to look for a single and let Tony Munyonga take strike, because Tony...
You never watched Msekiwa, that's why you're saying these things.
He is the known hitter. He's the senior guy. He was the in-batter. Tony Munyonga was in before Msekiwa, and Tony had faced a few more deliveries. I'm like, okay, for me, I'm going to have a look around. Let me knock it around, let you have a go, because you've been there before me. But no, Msekiwa's like, no, my guy, it's okay. Let me take this guy on if it's within my arc. Similar formula to Clive Madande.
put it in my zone. I'm not going to have a look around. I am going to take you on. If you give me 6 deliveries that are within my arc, my guy, it is your figures, not mine.
Must have heard you commentating. It's like, oh, yeah, this guy says I'm going to have a look around. Ah, okay, he's going to look for the ball.
Definitely. And I even made a statement saying, you know what, pardon me, Sekiwa, you are not going with my line of thought. You're going to have a go at it. And he had a magnificent go at it. And if you look at it, it was not fluke shots. They were proper cricket shots. He understood that we're towards the death end. And this guy is going to try and bowl yorkers outside off stump. So what was he doing? He was walking across the stump, smashing him leg side, playing him straight, you know, really hitting in the zones where somebody would go if somebody's going to bowl those kind of deliveries at you. So it was calculated shots whereby, yes, I am going to take you on. If you don't change the plan that you currently have, this is what I'm going to do to you. And he executed it quite perfectly.
I mean, say that. I mean, look, when I look at it, the fact that there is this kind of big hitting, I think a lot of it is down to what Sikandar Raza has brought to the senior national team, that you've got to go for the sixes, you've got to go for the fours, you've got to go for boundaries. Would you agree with that?
I do, because for me, my belief is that T20 cricket is a game of runs. Put runs on the board. This thing of saying let's keep wickets for the latter stages and then we will go for it. My guy, you are in the 16th over. What are the latter stages? We're already there.
Well, I mean, unless you hit six, you know, sixes of every over, then you're not 24 times six. Got another 100 runs in there.
We have 24 deliveries. Make the most of those. And look at that. Sekiwa needed only 11 to get 39. You know, the rest can, you know, everybody else can figure out what to do with the rest of the other of the 24. Mm-hmm. I just need 11 of those to get to 39, which was magnificent. So the minute you put the opposition under that kind of a pump, it gives your bowlers the belief that we can defend this. We actually have something to bowl at. Because if you target the par score 160, what is going to stop the opposition from getting 160? And also, what I think for me was key for the Zimbabwe under 25s is that when you're given an opportunity to represent your country at such a young age and you're being given something that they're saying, this is not for the big boys, you go and have a go. Utilize that opportunity. Grab a hold of it. You have nothing to lose. Even if you go down swinging, but at least they can see that this guy was swinging. He was not defending, but he was fighting. So that fight, what was key for Zimbabwe, and it made them look like they are a polished side that was actually, people would say, are you sure these are under 25s and not the actual senior side? Because that's what people are saying, like, why didn't you guys send this side for the qualifiers earlier on in the year?
Because let's not talk about that. I was in Namibia for that. No, it's a traumatic experience.
Traumatic as it had been, but because of the performance of how Zimbabwe played, they never put a foot wrong from early on. And they were not targeting low scores. They were not targeting 160s. They were targeting 200. You know, something that in that region, people don't expect. In the box, I had guys who come from Uganda, Dennis Musali, Innocent, and Daula. They spoke like, my guy, back home, if a side puts 70 on the board, they're like, yeah, we have won the game. And I'm like, guys, this is T20 cricket. And they're like, here, they're saying par score is 160. Getting to 160, that's a huge, we can defend it. But with you, Zimbabwe, it's like you never get enough. It's like, yeah, let's see what else is there, you know.
So the question becomes, I mean, sort of, before I go to players, it's sort of like, I think Zimbabwe's stamping its authority as, remember, we're a test-playing nation again.
Definitely it was. There was nothing cleaner and sweeter than what the boys did to stamp authority. It was there to actually show you, in my own words, what South Africa was trying to do when they sent the university side to say, yeah, we understand you guys want to play cricket. This is what we're going to give you. But Zimbabwe's approach was like, guys, you want to play international cricket, you need to match up to this. If you can't match up to these youngsters, you are not ready for T20 international.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there should be an Africa Cup, really, to be honest. Like, you know, like our Asia Cup is gone. Even if Zimbabwe and South Africa send under 25 sides, emerging side, be that as it may. But I, look, for me, this whole downgrading, it leaves me with a lousy taste in my mouth, because it takes away what Kenya did that was amazing against South Africa, because South Africa won the first match. And they were quite happy to take that victory, and there was a century that was in there, and that was well celebrated and so forth. The moment they lose against Kenya, it's like, okay, no, this is actually a baby side. We can't really. And then you finally find out even Zimbabwe's matches, and we're like, but dude, should we be saying when India send a side that doesn't have Virat Kohli and like 6-7 first teamers? And then therefore it's not a first team nation. So for me, I just think it's a complete disrespect for African cricket. Because I think what Kenya and I think Nigeria did, Nigeria beating Namibia, it's good for cricket. Because what it says is that it means that next time you can't disrespect the African continent by sending kids as your national team and then disowning them, throwing them under the bus. It's just a sour taste in my mouth.
There are quite a several painstaking moments in that whole scenario that you just spoke about. But for me, the minute you give somebody your national side jersey and saying you're representing your country,
that's another thing. And I mean, look, we've been saying that if it was a non national side, then their jersey should have been a different color. It's like when we have Zimbabwe A, they don't wear the Zimbabwe colors.
Exactly my point. But if you're going to give them your national side colors, say, go and play and represent the country, it doesn't matter whom they're playing against. You have said that this guy has the aptitude, has the ability to represent my country. Even if the results are not going your way, you can be willing to take them. Why didn't they jump on the first time they thrashed Ghana by almost getting to 300 in 20 overs? Why didn't you say, no, this is a university side, you know? And then now, because you've lost, there are moments that you ripped away from your own players. Let's look at George Van Heerden. That century that he scored, it was the youngest T20 century scored by a young captain. Because that boy is just barely 20. You know, he was the captain of the under-19 side at the 19 World Cup, and he scored a century. So you've taken that away from saying that in the side, when he is the captain of your national side, scores his first T20 international 100. You've ripped 100 from him that he scored. And you're like, boy, nah, that's not important. What's important is the status of the game, that it's a T20 international. For me, I think that affected how those boys played the rest of the games. They lost the zeal, the thrive of the backing of their national side. That you're just kids. It killed their morale.
Yeah, look, anyway, that's not our decision to make. I mean, the fact that then they take away the T20 international status away from Zimbabwe's matches as well is kind of like, okay, it's a bit weird. But no, anyway. I don't like to argue over such things because we could talk about a lot of things. But for me, I'm just happy that the African nations, the rest of the African nations, I want to call it the African nation because it's almost like an otherism. But I think that the ICC has done well in developing the game in Africa. And seeing the progress even of Uganda, even at our expense, going to the World Cup. Love to see it. It's a story. It's not great to see because we're not going. But I just do think that the two big teams, Zimbabwe and South Africa, should be doing a lot more to help the other teams come along. The same way that India helped Afghanistan. India, you know, does not send us a B team to play in the Asia Cup because there's Nepal and so forth. You respect the competition. And Zimbabwe put a team that they believed would win, and the team won. And they respected in the fact that five players with caps, and the captain is a regular for the Zimbabwe national team. Marumani is in and about. Nick Walsh has got 7 caps. Trevor Gwandu's got 2. Brian Bennett has got 3 or something like that. But Yeah, that's another. We can have a debate about this and actually have a special podcast that and throw in a couple of people. But I want to talk about two pieces of batting. That is Jonathan Campbell. Quite like his being able to place the ball into vacant areas to get those singles, and it's an interesting skill because sometimes if you don't really watch it, it looks like it's luck, but you can see that he is just intentionally placing that ball into a position where it's just wide of the fielder, and is able to snatch a run or two.
Definitely does. The good thing about it is that people would notice. Like, this is intelligent cricket. It is not just see ball, hit ball. Oh, there was a fielder there. I didn't see. But it's somebody, if you watch his game, he takes notice of field changes and field placements. And what was key actually in Zimbabwe's top order, or even if you look at the partnerships between Marumani and Jonathan Campbell, was the ability to respect balls when they're good balls. But it doesn't mean that I can't score off them. I turn them into singles. I work them into a vacant space, just a little bit touch right or left to the fielder that allows me to run and convert it into a run, which is key for T20 cricket. Don't get bogged down in dot balls. Convert those dot balls into ones and twos. And that's what Jonathan Campbell was so instrumental at doing. And he managed to rotate strike and build partnerships with that ability. And also in the way in which he struck his boundaries. Yes, there were some balls where, you know, it is pitch short and you're like, my guy, this is only going to go one way. It's going to go over the boundary at six. But if you look at his fours, they were not strokes of luck. They were intelligently placed. They were really whereby somebody knows the right amount of power to hit it so that it just beats point, or it just beats backward of square. It's just in front of him, you know. Or if it's straight, I'm going to play just straight and pierce mid on and mid off. That kind of ability, it was very, very good.
And then the other one I want to talk about is Rodney Mufuza. I mean, he comes in, he's only played one domestic T20. And I went on my Twitter. I was like, "What are the umpires? You know, I know nothing about cricket, really. I realized that a while ago." And I was like, "What is he doing? Like, you know, oh no, who is he?" And he goes in, and he just looks like he belongs to international cricket.
Rodney Mufuza was, you know, like as fluid as water. He looked solid. Even, do you know what was impressive about Rodney Mufuza? Is just even his back foot punch. The sound of the bat tells you, not, I'm not blocking you, my guy, out of fear. But if you don't stop this defensive stroke as a back foot punch, it's going to get me runs. And that ability to stand tall as he is and just have that essence of being present at the crease that people would look at him and say, this is a batter. This guy is here to bat. And the shots that he would play, just picking deliveries off his pads for six, or just a cover drive, but just giving it enough force to go over a mid-off and it's gone for six. That presence of mind in terms of knowing where his strong areas are. He is a brilliant pick for the future. Yes, there are certain areas that he needs to work on. And I am sure that people who watch the games for the future saw his weaknesses. Spin. Anything that is leg spin, that is turning away from him, he struggles with it. He walked past two deliveries coming down the wicket to charge at them. The second one was a brilliant ball. You know, it drew him forward, but his foot was just way outside his crease. But the first one, it drew him in like it's in your arc. Go for it. So those are just the areas that he might need to work on. But as an overall player, he can go punch for punch. You know, and he knows how to time the ball. He has that ability to read the game, the game awareness to know when a new bowler has been brought in, and you're like, let me enforce myself. You don't know me. First ball, to get you off your length, I'm going to hit you for a boundary. Let me see how you react about that. And it just creates a platform for other players to launch on from that space.
And I have to say that, of course, we must talk about the elephant in the room, Lord Maru. He's got such a cult following. I mean, like, now we've got to call him Lord Maru. It's like, That innings in the final was a statement innings. A lot of people were like, it reminds me of how he won that ODI against Australia, in which he decided, I'm going to be the one to win it, or I'm going to set the platform to win it. And by the time he got out, he'd gotten that 50, and that's something that's been taken away from him. That it is made in T20 50, but international. But he sort of showed why so many people are excited about him.
Definitely did it. And for me, for Maruman, I don't think he should look at the T20 status being removed away from it. It doesn't take away what he did.
Yeah.
The role that he played for the team in putting the team first and doing what the team needed for him on two occasions, versus Nigeria and in the final. He didn't have the best of starts in the whole tournament. There were a couple of games that he got out cheaply, and, you know, but for me, what was key for Marumani was the hunger that you saw on his face, that I deserve to be here. I am not here by chance. I'm not here by a fluke. I can actually play. And the ability to play to his strengths, the ability to freely play his shots without fear of getting out, or without fear of saying, we're chasing a low total, let me just do it for my stats. No, but the ability to say, I am going for it. So that essence of mind and that hunger to say, I deserve to play international cricket. If there is anybody who doubts my selection, doubt me now. You know, that kind of sense. So what do you have to say now? That kind of sense. So that's, and also I think the biggest thing that we saw in Marumani is also wanting to make his own additions to the team's effort to win. That was very instrumental. You would see it in not only in his batting, in his fielding. Marumani was a very, very instrumental fielder. He was a magnificent sweeper. Several occasions, his knee would get jacked into that hard surface of an outfield, but he would get up, dust himself up, wince a bit, but go on. If you look at the catch that he took, that took out Marlon Kruger, who many people look at as Namibia's enforcer, he never took his eye off the ball. Even knowing that Jonathan Campbell is going to, you know, bash into me, he kept his eye on the ball, held on to it, and then later looked at his mate and like, but bruv, you know.
Did you think I was going to miss that? Really, bro? Because, I mean, it also puts paid to the, you know, the long-standing position that where they say keepers make bad fielders.
And then with Marumani, you don't use that statement against him. You know, he always gave it more than, I would say, 300% out there. They are not
so American right now. America's never like, he gives 110%, he gives 225%. Like,
because actually, that would be an understatement. Because look, go at every fielding opportunity that came, he would run in. Even some when actually you would say, if I was there, that has been hit towards. No, in fact, I'm saying that has been hit beyond mid on. I am at deep backward square. Why would I run? But he would charge, go for it, and say, I'm going to save the boundary. I have saved one run for my team. Yes, they've run three, but I saved four. Yes, that ability to think like that and to act in that manner, priceless, I tell you.
I saw that in the team. And how much that of that goes down to Elton Shigumburai as the coach? Because, I mean, a lot of people don't know that a lot of these players were with him, went with him to India, to Omtex a couple of times, and Zimbabwe cricketers trusted him with going with this squad to go and claim the gold.
It's, for me, I wouldn't take anything away from the technical staff. They've been amazing. The bowling efforts that you see in Jabulani has been amazing with those youngsters. The way that Macheka runs in full pace, you can see even when he takes a wicket, how much it means to them. The efforts that they pull in. Their spinners, Wallace Mbayiwa, Owen Mzondo, how much they actually, you know, value that opportunity to bowl. It's been amazing. And I'll give you Tony Munyonga. Tony Munyonga was instrumental as an all-rounder. He didn't do much with the bat, but I tell you, when he was asked to bowl, he always, something would happen when he had the ball. So it presented Team Zimbabwe with an opportunity to take wickets, not only looking at two bowlers, but everybody who's been given a ball, you would sense that something is about to happen, because they have just this aura, this confidence that I have that golden touch and golden arm to make things happen for Zimbabwe. And look at it. It was a magnificent all-round team effort. And kudos to the coaching staff. Kudos to Elton Chikumbura, to their technical advisor, to Jabulo Ncube, their bowling coach. They've done amazing work. Very, very much amazing work.
I look at Elton, and I think a lot of people are like, Elton doesn't look like he says anything, doesn't talk to people. And I mean, right now, I remember looking at the videos, Elton was always the quiet one as he was coaching. Do you think that sort of gives the team confidence? Like, he doesn't panic.
Elton didn't panic. Yes, many the moments that people would not notice, but actually Elton would walk onto the field of play during a drinks break and have a chat with
I remember seeing that.
Yeah. He would have a chat with his batters. Guys, you're doing okay. You're doing fine. But let's press on. We are targeted 160. Let's see how much we can put on the board. Whether the team is bowling, he would walk in any chance he would get to have a chat with these players. Even in the final, you know, being asked to field first, he would go in and have a chat with them during the drinks break. And like, okay, guys, what are we looking at? What's happening? Right? Who's our danger man? Whom we can say, okay, this guy we need out. He would have conversations with them. That is his own style of coaching. That is brilliant. That gave me an opportunity to say, okay, this guy doesn't need to stand by the touchline like, you know, like soccer coaches and be like, hey, soccer, we are panel, you know, hey.
I mean, yeah. In all fairness, I think
I'll
most
tell you
coaches
the most vocal
don't.
The most vocal coach amongst the whole technical team was Jabulo. Jabulo, the bowling coach. He was magnificent. He was that 13th guy.
The cheerleader.
Yes. When he does, like, Shandai boys, Mukshanda, Mukshanda, a 7 Zen, Machit, a 7 Zen. Owen, the 7 Zaba. Yeah. That was Jabulo. For me, that I was like, if I can hear my coach saying, you're doing well, my guy, I'm not going to give it 110%. I'm, even if I don't have any energy from the seething heat of Ghana, somehow I'm just going to find an extra juice and say, I'm going to keep going. I'm doing well. My coach is happy, you know. And he'll be the first one to jump up when the boys come out and be like, guys, well done. So that was amazing. That was amazing.
What do you think this does, both the men's and the women's team winning the gold medal? What do you think it does for Zimbabwe cricket?
Gives them it's a big pat on the back. The amount of time people have put to develop cricket. First, I'll speak of the women's game. Zimbabwe has made huge strides. We now have franchises for the women's side. That's amazing. And the work is showing itself on the African continent that we are definitely the best at it. We have gold to prove it, you know. And it's showing that our tours to India and Omtex, they're not in vain. There is work that we're seeing and the results are showing. The coaches, the efforts that they're doing. However, what it does is that it gives them a challenge when they go to the global qualifiers and play against better opposition than what we faced, for us to really know where we stand in the world. But
I think this time you got to qualify. You know? Because, I mean, if they're going to give you 80,000 for the gold medal, come on, girls, you know.
Imagine.
If you qualify, hint, hint.
Yes.
Give them a call in. Hint, hint. Hint, hint, guys. You know what? If they know 80 grand is going to come again, look, we're going to be at the World Cup.
With the World Cup, I think it will double. You know, it could be more than that. Or in fact, it will be. But then going to the global qualifiers, we go with the notion of where we stand in Africa. We go knowing that we are there because we deserve to be there. We thrashed everybody, not just by small clinical, surgical, you know, execution of how good we are. So it's a huge pat on our backs. We go there knowing where we stand, what we have done, what we need to do. Even the games we played against Ireland, even emerging South Africa, not the side that we faced at the Africa Games. We know where we are. We know how good we are. So that notion, it just gives us a chance to say we can actually make it to the World Cup. We are that good.
And then the men's side. I think the question that'll be a better question for you is, from this squad, who would you take into a training squad. Bangladesh is coming right now. Don't put Lord Baru and Clive Madande, those in and around the team there, of the guys who don't have caps.
Guys who don't have caps, for me, what the under-25s did
is... You've got to name people. He's just trying to be a politician here.
Listen to where I'm starting from. Is they gave selectors a huge headache in terms of what to do, right? But for me, considering that we're going to Bangladesh, it's the subcontinent. It's spinner's paradise. Owen Mzondo needs to be in that squad. Wallace Mbayoa needs to be considered as well. Tony Munyonga needs to be considered, both with the bat and with the ball. You know, those ones would be very critical areas that I would look at. Tadiwa Msekiwa needs to be considered as well because of his variation. He played well. He can bowl at full pace. But however, he had the essence of mind to say, I am being brought into the side and play the role of a medium pacer, although I'm not really a medium pacer, but I can do that. I can bowl, slow bowls from the back of my hand and do it effectively, of which he did. And then just in a blink of a second changed my mind and like, why am I slowing stuff down? Let me just go full pace on these guys. Who knows what I might get? And he gets those surprise bounces and they do amazingly well. So, for me, that was crucial. So those are names that you need to consider. Batting-wise, that also is a huge headache because guys scored runs. Brian Bennett got runs. Tadiwa Nashimurumani got runs.
Those guys are already in.
Yeah. So, Jonathan Campbell showed his essence of that. I can build an innings. I can be an anchor. And also, I can go hard. Amazing. Then it also solidified people's places. Clive Madande, my guy.
He's in there.
He's in there.
Okay. So, Eli, thank you very much. What's your socials?
At the Master Eli. That's everywhere. Twitter, Instagram. That's where you find me. At the Master Eli.
Okay. So, remember to listen to the first part of this qualifier, of this discussion on the African Games, because we talked about the women's game, the men's game, and just make sure also that you come through to Harare Sports Club. The women's team is preparing for the qualifier. There are three T20s, one of them under lights, because I know Mazizi Mudagudu. You want to be out late. So, yeah, my name is Larry Kwederai, and just make sure you listen to the podcast on whatever podcatcher you get it on, wherever. Subscribe, because that's what gets us bumped up in terms of the ratings and as far as whatever platform we listen to. And otherwise, this is a Three Men on a Boat production. My name is Larry Kwederai. As I say, from where I come from, I see you, Sasebenza.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show.